Welcome to the River Talk Podcast. This is a podcast with Eric Weiseth, Priscilla Macy, and me, Zach Collier. Eric is off in the world, probably solving the world's problems today, but Priscilla is back. Welcome back, Priscilla.
Thanks, Zach.
that was the famous mute delay. It's good to have you back. And today we have a really cool guest, our friend Tom O'Keefe. We're going to talk about river openings and closures and just kind of what's happening out there in the world with boating. But before we do, we usually do news of the week, which talking to Priscilla earlier, we don't have any. And I do want to mention, though, we do have a sponsor for the show, and we're super grateful that Sotar is giving us a few bucks every week for doing our episodes. It helps us cover our cost. And for those of you that don't know, Sotar stands for State of the Art Rafts, and they're doing some really cool, innovative stuff right now. Jeremiah over there has some cool new fabrics he's working with. He's making lightweight rafts, lightweight duckies, and just working with urethane overall as a material. It's just a great material for boats. So those of you interested in looking at boats, check out Sotar. And they have cool sales going on old boats. So please check out their website. And with that, I want to introduce our esteemed guest this week. It's our friend Tom O'Keefe, PhD. And Tom is the Pacific Northwest Stewardship Director for American Whitewater. He's out there advocating for us all the time, for boaters, for access, and for river conservation. He's a true hero of rivers for paddlers. And this is he's a particularly great guest to talk about this too, because his PhD is in zoology with a specialty in aquatic ecology, I think. Did I get that right, Tom?
Yeah, no, that's right.
And so welcome to the show, Tom. We're just excited to talk a little bit about what's happening out there with river closures and river openings.
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate the opportunity to join the discussion and share what I know so far and what I'm still learning and trying to figure out here as things are changing rapidly.
So over the past few episodes, we've just been talking about like whether it's responsible to paddle and you know, we've had some discussions about it. And I don't know if we need to go into that here, although we can. But what we really want to know is like when are states looking at making paddling a thing again?
Well, I know for this region of the country, for the Pacific Northwest, and that's the region I know the best, the governor just made an announcement, Governor Inslee from Washington, made an announcement on Monday that the state of Washington will be opening sites that they manage for recreation. And the idea is that this will be for day use. They're still encouraging people to stay close to home. And, you know, I think we'll all have to kind of figure out what that means. But going on a trip, you know, several hours away, and overnight trips are definitely discouraged right now. But if you're lucky enough to have a river in your neighborhood or, you know, in your community, those types of activities will be permitted, you know, starting and encouraged starting next week. The caveat that the governor made really clear was that he had a press conference on Monday, is this is not a return to normal. And he said, you know, we're going to try this. And if it works, you know, great. We want to provide these opportunities to citizens of the state. But people have to practice physical distancing. And for paddlers, where this can get a little bit tricky is with the shuttle and logistics around the shuttle, of course. And he made clear that, you know, based on the input from public health officials, that we should not be engaging in activities where you're in cars and vehicles with people from outside your household unit. So what this means is for paddlers, you know, if you can do a bike shuttle, you know, I would recommend keeping groups pretty small, like, you know, maybe 2-3 people of people that you know, and everyone, you know, has to do their own bike shuttle if you're not in the same household group, but you can paddle along, you know, down the river together, keep an eye on each other for safety purposes. We're recommending that people, you know, tone it down a grade. So if you're a class 4 paddler, you know, consider local class 3 run, something that's roadside, you can do a bike shuttle on, and, you know, maybe, go out with another person. And I think it'd also be good for, as paddlers, I think we need to be really careful about not even giving the impression that we're congregating or gathering in groups. So this becomes really important at takeouts and put-ins, access points that are especially those that are visible to the public. So what that means is, you know, get in, get out, give a wave to people you see, you know, friendly smile, but don't linger in the parking lot. Don't, you know, let's not have a big crowd of, you know, 12, 15 people start gathering up and have that be visible to the neighborhood, because we don't want to be the ones that are on the TV news as the constituency yeah. that can't comply with this. So that's my basic overview.
I have a million questions. Not a million, but I have a lot of yeah. questions. You said that Governor Inslee's discouraging driving 2 hours of paddling. What does discouraging mean? It's like, definitely don't, or it's like, you probably shouldn't. What does discouraging mean?
Well, the way he described it in his press conference, and I've heard this concern from members of the paddling community too, is a lot of our rural communities where a lot of the paddling resources are in small communities that don't have a lot of healthcare facilities. And that's a real concern for healthcare workers in the state, many of whom, you know, happen to be members of the paddling community too. I think we have a lot of healthcare workers in our community. And so the real concern is just the farther you travel, the more likely you are to start having, you know, contacts, whether it's at the gas station, you know, at a grocery store. And so they're trying not to draw a real hard and fast line on this and trying to let people use some judgment, which I know is always like a very tricky thing for human beings to do. But the idea is, you know, if you've got a river that's kind of your local run, you know, that's something you should feel like you should be able to go to. But if you're going, you know, several hours away, it has to be an overnight trip, you might be having a contact with folks in that community. That's where the problem lies. And but, you know, to their credit, I think they're providing a little bit of flexibility that you can be yeah. completely self-contained and want to venture a little farther. You know, that would be appropriate.
Okay. So maybe a rule would be, if you can leave your house and not stop at a gas station, a rule of thumb, I don't say a rule, but like a rule of thumb is, if you can stop, do it, not stop at a gas station outside your community or stop for food outside your community, that would seem maybe appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think so.
And this is starting May 5th. So like right now we, you know, according to Governor Inslee in Washington, we shouldn't be paddling. But starting May, sorry, I think I said March 5th, starting May 5th, then that's when this would start.
Yeah, I mean, you can really get into trying to parse the nuances of exactly what the order says. And I should mention, mm-hmm. you know, state of Oregon, state of Idaho have very similar orders. And basically what they say is that you shouldn't be leaving your house except for essential purposes. But all of these orders include recreation yeah. as an essential purpose. So that's where you get into a little bit of the nuance here of, you know, if going outside and engaging in some physical activity is something appropriate. The way we've messaged this at American Whitewater is to keep it in your zip code. So that's kind of where we originally started. So walks around the neighborhood, you know, bike rides. If you happen to live in a community that, you know, you're living right on the river and you can access the river safely and legally without using a recreation site that's closed, you know, that would be appropriate. So there may be some people that, you know, that have been out there doing a little bit of paddling, and, you know, that would be consistent with the governor's order and the public health guidance to that recreation is appropriate and considered an essential activity. But, you know, I think what the new order does is it just opens up a little bit more flexibility and gives us the ability to, you know, go venture a little bit outside our neighborhoods now. And the governor described this as turning a dial and not turning a switch. So he said, you know, it's not like we're everything's off and now we're turning it all on, but it's, you know, some gradual change that we're trying to do, and based on people's you know, compliance and you know, how well it works, maybe we can open it up a little bit more.
So I want to get into Oregon and Idaho, and I know Priscilla's been involved in working with Oregon too. But before there's like, I think there's a tricky question I wanted to get you guys' feedback about. And so I'm imagining, you know, May 5th, the White Salmon's open again. And I heard it's not going to be open because, you know, maybe the Forest Service isn't ready to open it. But let's just say for, let's
Yeah,
say
we should. Yeah, we should. Let's circle back on federal agencies because that's another issue. But
Let
yeah,
me
go through your example
let me
here.
lose my example of the wind instead.
Yeah.
You know, right now
All
the wind
right.
is flowing at a nice level. It's
All right.
hard to know it's like 5 feet and I can't go do it, or I shouldn't go do it. So I'm staying at home. But May 5th, I'm going to want to go do it.
Right.
And I get to put in, and there's people congregating, drinking beers, like not respecting what we should be
Right.
respecting. How, like, and right now, if you say something to people, you get called like a social justice warrior, and people get mad at you for shaming. And like, I think there's a lot of people that are afraid to say something. But in that instance, when things are officially reopened, and if people aren't following sort of Governor Inslee's ideas of how he opened, what should we do as paddlers in terms of talking to other boaters who are might ruin it for the rest of us? Should we say something to them? And again, I don't know the answer. I don't know if you guys know the answer, but I think getting some thoughts about this, like how to talk to other boaters so that we don't lose access again.
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, that's the biggest issue that we face here is right now there's a mechanism in place for businesses. If businesses aren't following appropriate physical distancing guidelines, members of the public can report that. And I would hate for us to be the community that gets you know, reported by others outside this community that see us, you know, congregating to put in. So I mean, it just comes down to personal responsibility, and you know, we need to try this and see what works. I mean, everyone has to do what's comfortable for them when they encounter these situations. I mean, some people are not real comfortable with the, you know, the confrontation, but you know, to the extent people feel comfortable, you know, saying something. You know, we're all in this together. So.
I know, like, the wind is going to drop out. I'm guessing by May 5th, it's going to be on its way out for the season. I'm probably going to go there at 6 a.m. in the morning before anybody's there and try to just get a run in, just to get like a, you know, get on the wind before it's done for the season. But I bet because rivers will be dropping out right when this May 5th happens, that day in the next few days, things will be very popular, and I'm guessing overwhelmed, especially if like the White Salmon is still closed then. Something for me, like locally, the wind will be the one thing we can go do. And so I just see a
Right.
lot of people going there at once who've been cooped up for a month or so not
Right.
paddling.
Yeah, and I think your idea, Zach, of you know, thinking about is there a time that I could go? So you know, people are working from home, some not all, but some people have a little bit more flexibility with their schedules. And if you can, you know, find a time on a weekday and get your fix on a Friday and, you know, or Thursday, and maybe leave the weekend opportunities to those that are working during the week. I think that would be really helpful. I mean, naturally, often what our community likes to do is, you know, we like to get a group together and you know, get together on maybe a Saturday afternoon, and everyone's out, you know, hanging out together. And you know, a very big element of our sport is the social aspect of it and getting people together. And we just need to think a little bit differently for the next, you know, immediate future, and think more about like who's that, you know, one person we want to go, you know, go out with on a Thursday morning, you know, at 7 a.m. I don't know if I'll do 6 a.m., but maybe 7. And you know, and just, you know, we'll both run a bike shuttle, and it'd be a chance to, you know, see another person and, you know, have an experience on the river. So that's kind of where my head is in thinking about how to approach this.
I mean, I am not an early riser. I don't remember the last time I got up before 8 a.m. But I feel
Right.
like a good responsible thing would be to do it a 6 a.m. run. Now, what a unique opportunity to, like, as the sun's coming up, float down the wind. With nobody out there. I personally think it'd be a
Yeah.
pretty cool thing to do, and I personally have the flexibility to do it. And I don't want to be there at, noon o'clock when kayakers are showing up and there's tons of people. And I
Yep.
also worry about the community of Carson. If May 5th, Carson, the town of Carson, right by the wind, sees 50 trucks driving through, they might all of a sudden be like, they could be understandably annoyed. Or the people that live on that takeout road, they might be a little bit worried that tons of people are coming through and potentially spreading COVID somehow. I have no idea. I'm just kind of talking out loud about things going through my
No,
head right now.
we were talking about this yesterday at American Whitewater. I mean, the irony is to if you're gonna social distance or as a kayaker, rafter or whatever, and you're gonna come, in a solo vehicle, so no longer is it, meeting up at the grocery store parking lot where consolidate vehicles. Everyone's in their own separate rig now with their own, and we've all got these boats on top of our vehicles that are an immediate advertisement as to who this is coming up the road, and suddenly a group that might have been consolidated into two or three cars is 10 cars, and that's where I think it gets important too to think about, coordinate with one or two other people, and yeah, let's see if we can stagger times on some of this stuff. But that's something we've been talking about, and yeah, I share your concern about visibility of what looks like, more people than usual. May just be people in individual vehicles.
Yeah, and again, the timing. It's like we've been cooped up for a while. A lot of us haven't been
Yeah.
paddling. We're jonesing to get out. But it's also when the snowpack is dying. So a lot of the unique rivers are kind of petering out. So it's a
Yeah.
short window of time in early May that a lot of people are going to want to paddle.
Right.
Well, let's move this discussion to Oregon and Idaho. I think Washington's the first I know of that's actually said, like, let's start opening some recreation up. Are you guys hearing anything about Oregon or Idaho?
Yeah,
Yeah.
what's the latest you got on Oregon, Priscilla? I checked in this morning and sounds like they're not ready to announce,
No,
but they want to coordinate.
they've
So.
yeah. So let's see. Last week there was a somewhat large call of stakeholders gathered to get feedback on considerations for reopening. One of the biggest considerations is trying to coordinate across different properties. So, like, for example, you don't want a county park opened in a state park not, or vice versa, because people will go to the place that's open and it may not have the capacity to deal with a bunch of traffic. So they're trying to work with all the agencies, and then of course working across state lines as well. So you that ideally you don't have people just going across the border that live close by when that opens, and causing a lot of impact to those areas. It sounds like next week our governor is going to roll out guidelines for reopening components of outdoor recreation and components of the economy. What we have heard is that most likely what is going to happen is day use sites that are easy to abide social distancing protocols will be opened first. Camping, of course, will not be. Restrooms most likely will not be because of the difficulty of complying to CDC standards in those in outdoor bathroom facilities. And boat ramps, a lot of them are actually open right now, but the Marine Board is working with a few stakeholders, and I'm talking with them as well about what makes sense in terms of encouraging social distancing at boat ramps. So, like, sometimes there can be clogs at popular ones. So maybe setting up temporary lines that say these are staging areas, wait 5 minutes before launching so that you can have appropriate distance on the water from each other. Obviously, it changes based on if it's a lake or a river, or if it's a trail, or if it's a formal boat ramp, those sort of things. So those are all the nuanced considerations that people are talking about, but it seems like the thing that's going to open up first is going to be day use and dispersed use sites. And then they're going to monitor and see how it goes before opening up anything else. And just ensuring that those areas have enough staff to support it, you know, to empty out garbage, those sorts of things.
And Priscilla, so that sounds pretty consistent with what's coming out of Washington. And when I was in touch with the governor's office in Oregon, it sounds like they are striving to be consistent, to have Washington and Oregon be consistent. So that sounds like we're heading towards that and some more clarity on all this next week. You know, you mentioned the bathroom facilities, and I wanted to highlight that in response to the question Zach asked about, like, how far can you go? Mm-hmm. And I think one thing to remember is, maybe if you sort of think about it this way, if you can do your bathroom business at home, then go to the recreation site and you know, enjoy your recreational activity, and then you're good. Like, that's probably an appropriate distance. If you're the kind of person that, you know, you're traveling so far that you're going to need a bathroom facility somewhere on the way, that's where you're starting to get into the point where it's like too far. And that's a real big issue that the agencies are concerned with, because as Priscilla noted, you know, they just don't have the personal protection equipment available to be able to clean bathrooms. And, you know, if you have locked bathrooms, recreation sites that people are using, you know, you start to run into a sanitation issue. So that's probably another metric that people can think about. Yeah. And also with garbage, you know, don't assume that there's going to be garbage cans there, you know, pack it in, pack it out. You know, if we can do those things, that'll go a long ways to thinking about how to, use areas appropriately for day use.
I'm sure people aren't dying to be cleaning bathrooms right now either, like heavily used bathrooms are not places no. people are excited to go clean for a multitude of reasons.
Right.
What if you brought a groover? What if you had, or a wag bag? What if you brought your own?
Yeah. And that, you know, that came up so the River Management Society, which is the professional society of river managers, they had a webinar last week. There were over 100 participants in that webinar, you know, basically river managers from all across the country trying to, you know, work together and share best practices. And that's come up as an idea that, you know, those of us in the river running community, you know, do have experience certainly on multi-day trips with managing our own waste. And that's, you know, that's not a bad idea to consider. It's, you know, maybe you throw that wag bag, you know, in your glove box in case you need it.
Yeah. And for those of you that don't know what a wag bag is, it's just a bag you can poop in. I mean, you can fit like 5 or 6 poops in there pretty easily.
Oh, yeah.
And it's pretty self-contained. It has a little tiny piece of toilet paper. So you probably want to, you know, you might want to bring a little more toilet paper if more than one of you are going to use it. But it comes with a little hand sanitizing wipe. And that might even be my gear of the week, is the wag bag. But it might be a way, like, for you know, river users who do want to travel might need to use the bathroom to bring wag bags and use those in a private way. That, I love that idea. That's something that I hadn't even thought of before this call, was that the toilet issue for people traveling.
Right.
What about Idaho? Any updates about – have you guys heard anything about Idaho?
Yeah, I haven't heard any updates. I mean, I know they have some strict guidance on interstate travel. So, you know, doing your road trip to Idaho right now is kind of a no-go. But I'm not as in close contact with state officials there. So,
yeah, might have to connect with Aaron at Idaho Guides about that.
Yeah, I mean, why don't we go? Yeah, so on the federal lands, and I was just reviewing the closure order for Bureau of Land Management and Forest Service. So many of the rivers that we recreate on here in the Pacific Northwest are either administered by the Forest Service or, in the case of Oregon, by the Bureau of Land Management. And their closure orders are focused on developed recreation sites. So it's the developed recreation sites that are closed. And we referenced the white salmon earlier. So the river access at BZ that's administered by the Forest Service, They also administer the lands. There's not really a lot in the way of facilities there, but at Husum, where Husum Falls is, that's Forest Service land. So those are, you know, quote unquote, considered developed recreation sites, and they have those closed, and they're actually closed to entry. So technically, what that means is that you're not, you know, by order of the forest supervisor, not permitted to enter those sites right now. So I've been in touch with the Forest Service over the last couple of days. I think, you know, they were, I would say, not prepared for the announcement that the governor made on Monday. And I think part of what's going on here, I mean, there seems to be a little bit of a difference between Washington and in Oregon in this regard, where in Washington state, the governor, you know, made the announcement and then made the announcement on behalf of the state agencies that he has jurisdiction over. It seems like Oregon's taken a little bit more time to do a little bit more coordination with some of the local and federal recreation providers. I've seen some of the email lists of the people involved in those discussions, and it's a little bit broader spectrum of, you know, trying to get everyone on the same page. I think as far as the Forest Service is concerned, however, they're going to have a hard time meeting this timeline of being able to open sites next week. I'm trying to work and see if we can get them to take a little bit more nuanced perspective on this and not look at all sites equally. And I think, you know, sometimes the agency falls into a little bit of a bureaucratic trap of trying to, you know, do everything all at once. And my hope would be that a site like the BZ access on the White Salmon, you know, we could just make a decision that, like, okay, the bathroom's not going to be open there in the immediate future. Everyone has to plan ahead for that. But you can go in and access the site and get to the river there. You know, obviously they have some bigger sites that have deferred maintenance needs that they need to address. And they're trying to, you know, and they're, you know, like everyone else, they're all working from home. And so they don't have the field crews out to deal with some of the issues that traditionally get taken care of at this time of year before the recreation season kind of gets into full gear. So I think they're feeling a little bit overwhelmed by just the scope of what they have to deal with in their entire recreation portfolio. And what I'm hoping is we can, you know, at least open some stuff up incrementally where the cost and effort to do so is relatively modest. And the, you know, like I said, the sites on the White Salmon River come to mind as some that may fit in that category. So we'll see where that goes. You know, I'm working on that, you know, over the next week here. Another area that comes to mind is Icicle Creek over on the Wenatchee Ranger District in Washington State, you know, roadside run. That's a resource for people in the community of Leavenworth there. Currently the roads closed there and access to the recreational facilities is closed, but it would be nice if we could have the gate open and, you know, people being able to access that in that local community. So I'll be working on some of those things and try to have those conversations with land managers from across the region here in the coming days and through the week. And we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, I think the White Salmon is going to be a particularly important one and contentious because, you know, it flows all summer. You know,
right.
once everything kind of drops out, it's where everybody tends to go. And I think there's going to be a lot of push specifically to get on the White Salmon. Is there, as paddlers, is there anything that we can do to support efforts to get open? Are there, like, letters that we can write, people we can call, or the things we shouldn't be doing? Should we, like, if people are paddling, be like, hey, like, talk to them and say, don't, because you're going to make things worse. Like, what can we do to help that?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and this is always a hard one, is if, you know, the more that we can comply with the orders that are in place, the easier that makes my job as an advocate. And I know that's really hard, especially if you live there, you know, in the community, like, let's say in BZ, for example, you're like, oh my God, all I got to do is, you know, just run across the street with my boat, you know, duck the tape line and I'm on. And, you know, and I know some people do that, and I'm not going to, you know, sort of, you know, police that or judge that. But the more that happens and the more visible that is, the harder it makes my job to, you know, be able to make the point that, like, we can do this and we can, you know, follow instructions and protocol. And, you know, the more visible that sort of activity is, you know, just the harder it is for me to make my case with the land managers that, you know, we're going to, you know, exercise precautions, you know, physical distancing requirements and all that. So that's, you know, as far as what people can do. And I know it's a sacrifice, and I know it's hard. Yeah. Because you see the younger kid that just goes and does that, and you're like, well, God, if he's doing it, like, I feel like I should too. But, you know, that is an action and a sacrifice that people can make that, you know, is helpful. I'm going to do a little bit of follow-up, you know, just maybe check in with the congressional offices. Sometimes our members of Congress can be helpful in trying to nudge things along. I want to be delicate with this, though, and respectful of the fact that the Forest Service and their federal agencies, you know, they're feeling a lot of pressure right now. You know, there's still a lot of uncertainty about the virus. There's still a lot of cases here in the region. You know, it hasn't disappeared. And, you know, everyone wants to proceed, you know, carefully and cautiously. And we've got real capacity issues with people that are trying to, you know, do all this from home, and especially in some of these rural communities where, you know, some of our agency friends might be working from home with, you know, not the fastest internet service, you know, that they had at the office. And so, you know, we'll just keep having the conversations and, you know, see where we can land on this. I would say if someone like really wants to do something and, you know, is just fired up to, you know, take some action, inquiries to your member of Congress are always helpful, and they always respond best to people who are constituents. And I say, you know, keep it respectful, professional, and I also say short. You know, don't write a long essay on, you know, the injustices of river closures on, you know, and it's like, get to the point. Most of these staffers are reading stuff on a smartphone, on a handheld device. So concise and just, you know, professional and is helpful and can help raise the profile of things sometimes.
Yeah, I write a good number of letters to different members of Congress, and I don't have the time to write well-researched, well-thought-out letters to them. It might have been like half a page. It's like, dear staffer, like, I'm a paddler, I'm an outfitter, here's a river I love, and I'll say, I really want it to be protected because of this. I don't tell them the law I want them to protect it by. I don't, like, cite statute. I, you know, I don't have that kind of energy, but a quick half a page, like, I care about this place, do something about it. And I personally leave it up to them to figure out what that thing is, or leave it up to somebody like you, Tom, and them to work together. I'm just expressing my feelings, not like the law.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's really effective, because I can tell you the way this sort of works in practice is, let's say, you know, Jamie Herrera Butler, she's a member of Congress there, represents that community around the White Salmon. You know, if she got, I don't know, a handful of inquiries from people who live there and, you know, asking about, hey, you know, we're kind of wondering when the Forest Service is going to open and, you know, if you're able to help on that. That's where, you know, typically then I'll get the note back, you know, maybe from that member of their staff, like, hey, we're, you know, hearing from, you know, people in this community and, you know, what should we do here? So that happens all the time when, you know, a handful of people write letters into, whether it's Senator Wyden in Oregon or, you know, Senator Murray in Washington or the local members of Congress, you know, and I'll get the call from the staffer of like, hey, we've been hearing from the whitewater paddling community on this, you know, what should we be doing here? And that kind of sets the stage and establishes some credibility for me when I go in and talk to these folks that there's actually someone behind the interest that I'm expressing and what we're trying to work out. So absolutely. And
does Governor Inslee, like, does his mind even go to Whitewater? Is he just like recreation in general, or does like the idea of Whitewater cross his desk and he's thinking about Whitewater paddlers?
Probably not a lot, although I have spoken with him a few times. I mean, he's someone that I know. I mean, like all politicians, he acts like he's your best friend every time, every time we see each other. But, I mean, he is someone that I know, and we recognize each other, and he's generally aware that whitewater paddling is a activity that people engage in and enjoy in the state. I don't know how much he's doing it actively, but I know he has done a little bit of kayaking, I think mostly sea kayaking. So it's, an activity that he's somewhat familiar with. He has a policy advisor. One of his senior policy advisors is John Snyder, who's his policy advisor on recreation and economic development around recreation. I'm sure John has been slammed working really long hours, and was a lead staff person working on this, how best to message this opening of recreation in the state. John's a great guy and someone I've known since he first took the position, and someone that I, check in with by phone. And, when I'm in Olympia, or, have meetings with other folks in the outdoor recreation, he's kind of our point of contact. So, most of our interaction is not directly with the governor, but with his policy advisor, John. And John's very aware of whitewater and whitewater That's recreation awesome to hear. And how important it is in this state. So,
and are there is the access fund to climbing or IMBA and mountain biking? Are they all doing the same things? Like, are there all these different recreation groups like advocating for their recreation being open and how it can be done responsibly?
Yeah. So we have a weekly call. Priscilla participates in this too with the Outdoor Alliance, which, includes, I don't know, what are we up to, 10 or a dozen organizations now?
Yeah, I think it's 10.
Yeah. So the climbers, the skiers, the mountain bikers, the paddlers, the surfers, the mountaineers, we're all coordinated and on our weekly calls with the national policy staff from around the country representing all these different groups. I mean, this has been our agenda item, kind of standing agenda item for at least the last month. And we do a great job of sharing information, sharing ideas, best practices. And I have to credit, certainly for both Washington and Oregon, the state agencies and the governor's office have done a great job of convening different user groups. So, I got a call on Friday in the lead up to the governor's announcement on Monday on what they were planning and an opportunity to provide input. And they were calling everyone, and then they got everyone together on a phone call. I also want to credit REI as well. REI has, really taken a leadership role in this space, despite the hit to their retail sales that this whole thing has created. They've still stepped up and financially supported organizations like ours, like American Whitewater, and their staff, their policy staff, have invested working on this issue and working with the user community and being a bridge between the user community and our elected officials, and being able to use their clout as a large business in Washington State and in the region has been really helpful.
Yeah, and I'm super grateful of all these groups like American Whitewater that Tommy worked for and the Outdoor Alliance that you guys are involved with and all of them. I feel like a lot of these groups that we have exist in a large part for times like this. Like, if we didn't have user groups right now, if we didn't have associations, we maybe wouldn't have a seat at the table. And because American Whitewater exists and is effective, we have a seat at the table to try to get these places open. If we didn't have that, my guess is that Governor Inslee may not care so much about whitewater or recreation. So I'm super grateful for the work that all these groups are doing right now.
Yeah, no, it's significant that his first announcement was on the building industry and opening up construction projects, and I guess apparently they have a little more clout than we do, but you know, we were second on the list of like, okay, now I'm going to try and figure out stuff about outdoor recreation, and that's literally what the governor's office and the state agencies have focused all their time on, you know, over the past week. And you're right. If they had nobody to call and nobody to talk to, and, you know, no one kind of in their ear kind of bugging them about this stuff. I mean, we've been trying to be really respectful of the fact that we're in a tremendous, an unprecedented public health crisis here. So trying to walk that line of being really respectful and aware of that, but at the same time recognizing that, you know, there are some things that, you know, we can probably do appropriately. And at some point we will be on the other side of this. And, you know, the entry to this was very abrupt and very sudden, just everything shut down. And then just, and now I think we're in that point where people are trying to kind of sort through of like, okay, how can we, you know, we're not through this, but, you know, where are some areas where we can have a little bit more nuanced approach to our management, and where can we try some things and you know, just sort of see how it works. And I think, having groups like ours that are, you know, able to participate in that dialogue is been critical.
It's so huge. I mean, I'm dying to go on paddle. My Instagram is very boring right now. And
yeah,
my Instagram public is desperate need of some photos, or at least my ego is in desperate need of sharing with the world how rad I am. So I'm excited for May 5th so I can get my Instagram game going again.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of want to take sum this up, and then if you guys have anything to add, we can keep talking or move on to Gear of the Week. But I think what I'm hearing in general is that states are moving forward on opening up recreation. It is a priority. That Washington set a date for May 5th, and that when that happens, we need to continue to be responsible in the way that we recreate close to home, not using resources outside your community, and paddling in small groups. And that if we're able to do that, hopefully we'll see more openings. If we're not, it makes it harder for you to do your job and advocate for continued recreation openings. Does that sound like a fair summing up?
Yeah. No, I think that's a great summary. Say, the other thing I just wanted to mention too, that I've been on a few calls with state legislators and others, and just talking to our elected officials, one of the things that has become so apparent to them, and I've heard several of them articulate this in different ways, is that outdoor recreation and public lands are incredibly critical to mental and physical health. Like, that message has come through loud and clear to our elected officials, and, you know, to the extent people want to emphasize that and amplify that, that's helpful. But what I can tell you is they're hearing it loud and clear. And so the other thing we're talking about in American Whitewater and with our colleagues at Outdoor Alliance is, how do we utilize this awareness moving forward and use it for things like resources for additional acquisitions for places where we really need, you know, improved public access. So, you know, going back to the White Salmon again, there's some needs there, or the Hood River, right? So that's something that's in our very much in our mind and in our consciousness. And also, as we think about, you know, economic recovery and economic stimulus, how can we invest resources in not just, you know, roads and bridges, but also infrastructure for river access points and facilities for river access, and, you know, from the biking community, you know, access to biking trails and infrastructure around trails and trail development. So we're involved in a lot of discussions in that regard, and I think we're going to see some opportunities start to emerge here. And we're very much in that discussion, and we're there to make sure that it's not just, you know, the K Street lobbyists in D.C. getting resources for roads and bridges, but also to make sure there's an investment in outdoor recreation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, awesome. Priscilla, do you have anything to add, or should we wrap this up and go to Gear in the Week?
I was just going to add on the line of our subject, if anyone is wanting to participate or listen to a webinar, Outdoor Alliance is hosting a webinar on March 5th about responsible recreation generally. So if anyone wants to hear a broader conversation about what you should do to be responsible and safe, you can register on Outdoor Alliance has it on their Facebook page. So it's March 5th, just talking broadly about responsible recreation and how to keep safe when you're recreating outside.
Cool. I'll try to remember to add a link on our website to that webinar too. Yeah. I mean, and it is a responsible recreator would listen to that webinar to learn how to be more responsible. So that would be great if people did listen and kind of try to, I feel personally strongly that we should do our best to be very responsible right now for everybody's good, but I'm not going to jump on my soapbox anymore. Let's move on to Gear of the Week, and I'll go first. I definitely am all about wag bags, but I want to do one I've done before, and that's an American Whitewater membership, and it's a good time to remind people about that, because I feel like American Whitewater not only needs the amount of income they get from that, which is not that much. I think a membership is not that expensive, but
$35
a year, bucks. Right? That's a year. Yeah. And I think you even get like some cool stuff when you sign up, but it also really helps when Tom or other members of American Whitewater go to advocate for us to say how many members there are. So you're giving them $35, but you're also lending them your voice. And that's huge. And I would guess almost more important than the $35. So I would encourage anybody listening who sees the value of what Tom's doing to get their American Whitewater membership, which means you get a sticker that you can put on your car or your paddle or your friend's car.
And you get a magazine.
You get a magazine. Although you should get it online, because the magazine costs American Whitewater money and it uses paper. So you can get the magazine. But also, you can also read it online as a PDF, which is maybe the more responsible thing to do.
It is super cool
to have the magazine on your at your house, though, and flip through it. Yeah, sorry, Tom.
Yeah, can I just want to also just sort of touch on the fact, because, you know, some people have been curious on this, that we are in a good position right now. You know, American Whitewater is an organization. We've had Mark Singleton as our executive director for, you know, over 15 years now. He runs the organization very well, you know, took us through the 2008 recession. We've got, you know, financial systems are in place. We've got a diverse funding stream. I think we've got some concern over what, you know, kind of the next year looks like, but we're in a good place. We haven't had to lay anyone off. We're financially stable. And I can assure you that even small contributions will be put to immediate use and will help us to be more effective. But that's, I just want to let people know that we're up and running, functioning, you know, out there advocating for everyone's behalf. And we're going to be able to continue to do that with everyone's support. So.
Awesome. Well, do you guys have any Gear of the Week?
Yeah. I honestly can't remember if I did this one before, but my Gear of the Week is Bag Balm. It's basically this ointment / like lip balm type thing that was it's originally made for like cow udders. So it has like some antibacterial properties, and it's also like a moisturizer. So I originally started using it when I was climbing more than paddling, just to like moisturize my fingers, and now I basically use it for everything, for chapstick to like when you know scrape your knee and it gets all like crusty, putting it on there so it doesn't scar as much, and peel as much and using it for like dry cracked heels and fingers. And I like, it's not very expensive. You can find it at, I think it's usually in like the pharmacy section of a grocery store. And like a tin of it, I think I've had this tin for maybe like 5 years or something like that.
Yeah, I think it actually was originally like a thing you found at feed stores back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Like river
yeah.
guides would find it for the cracked feet and buy it yep. at a feed store, and they somehow made it itself into drugstores.
Totally. But yeah, it's awesome. It's a many things in one.
Sweet. Tom, any gear of the week? Anything you want to share with us?
Oh, I got mine. So mine is I have my Trek 610 road bike from 1984.
Ooh.
I've had this thing since I was in high school. Steel frame, totally bomber bike. It's been sitting in the garage. You know, there were a few cobwebs on it. And when the whole closure order came down, I mean, I live in Seattle in the city, and it's just been wonderful to get back into road biking a little bit. Been biking through the neighborhoods. There's a lot less traffic. And I just love this bike, and I haven't spent enough time on it in the last, you know, probably 2 decades now. You know, I've had this bike for 30 years, over 30 years, and it's great to be on it, and I love it. So that's my gear of the week.
Awesome.
I did the same thing. I pulled my road bike out of my basement, put a new battery in the little thing that tells you how fast you're going. And
right.
I've been digging it. Like, it just, they're so yeah. fast and nimble. And yeah, I've definitely, mine's a Trek something. It's not as old as yours, but I pulled my Trek out of the basement, and I've been really digging road biking again too. I'm with you 100% on that one.
Yeah.
So, these paddlers are going to be in great shape once they're pulled
the paddle. Well, that's the amazing thing. It's like, I don't know. This was somehow with the not having to go to any 1500 calorie lunch and lunch meetings anymore. I'm eating healthy. I'm like on my road bike. I've lost a few pounds. I'm like,
awesome.
I'm ready to go.
Summer's looking good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for another episode, guys. That was fun, and appreciate you guys' time, and the updates have been really helpful. If anybody in the audience wants to ask us questions or send us feedback, we haven't had an email really for like 2 months, and I think it's because we haven't properly announced our new email address, which is questions@rivertalkpodcast.com. So if you want to send us hate mail or love letters or just a something to read, we'd love to have it, and we'll respond in a future episode. Thanks for joining us. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
All this river's looking fine.